is Build and Analyze, a weekly news and discussion show about the world of iPhone, iPad, iOS, mobile web development, coffee, and minivans. It's June 12th, Tuesday. It's 2012. Marco is at WWDC and has taken some time out of his busy schedule there to do this show. Marco Arment, of course, the creator of Instapaper. I'm Dan Benjamin. This is episode number 81. I'd like to say a quick thank you to our special sponsors this week. Dark Sky, FreshBooks, and Hover.com. And we will tell you more about them as the show continues. So how's WWDC?
Oh, it's fantastic. You can tell by how I sound, just like last year. You know, remember how last year I did the show from here, from almost the same setup in a different hotel. And I sounded just about as bad as this for the exact same reason, which is that I was out trying to talk to people at bars last night. And of course, to talk to people in bars, you have to scream at them. So after a night of screaming, I sound like this.
Yeah.
But yeah, not bad. I think it makes me sound sexy. What do you think?
Sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
One of the people I was shouting at was introducing myself to Scott Forstall, which was really interesting and terrifying. I was having a drink with the wonderful guys from Studio Neat, and we noticed that Forstall was like 15 feet away sitting, you know, with Apple people. And I was like, do I go up and introduce myself? You know, do I be that guy? Well, then somebody else was that guy. Emma introduced himself, and Scott did not seem to mind too much, or at least he put on a good face for it. So I waited a few minutes, then did it myself. It was like, "Hi, I'm Marco Arment." Dead silence. Of Instapaper. Oh, hi. So I met him and a few other people, and you know, small talk. It was fun.
Yeah.
And yeah, he gave me all the inside scoop about what's coming with the iPad 7 and the Mac Pro.
Of course. 8.
And but I can't tell you any of that.
No,
no. It was good. It was you know, he was a pleasant guy, and we had a brief bit of small talk, and then I let him get back to his friends, and I got back to Studio Neat, and it was good. I was scared, but it was good. And then the funny thing was, oh, I can't say. Oh well, the funny thing was, I then went back to sit down, and then some other guy came up to me who seemed like he was scared to introduce himself to me, which. It really put everything into perspective a little bit. So that was fun. Anyway, what do you think of this hardware?
Well, I think the MacBook Pro, new MacBook Pro, looks really, really awesome. I'm not in the market for that, and I'll probably never be in the market for that, but it makes all the other machines that I have seem outdated and pathetic.
Yeah.
But even though it's not the device that I'm looking for, it still looks really, really great.
You know, it's like when the unibody MacBook Pro first came out, before the Air was out, you know, like when it first went unibody.
Yeah.
It made all of the previous generation MacBook Pro cases all of a sudden look very old.
Right.
And I think that's doing the same thing here. Let me go through the hardware with what I think of it, because how much time do we have?
Well, whatever we need.
All right. On my end, we have about an hour.
Okay.
So I'm going to get back to a very important session that's starting in an hour. So,
all right. So we will do a 1 hour or less episode.
Sure.
Just condensed. Like you said, you could talk at double
speed. I'll talk at 2x.
Yeah.
All right. So first of all, the Mac Pro, we have to talk about this. They updated it kind of. It's such a minor update that they even today removed the little new tag from the store. You know, like on the Apple Store online, they have like a little new sticker like on all the computers after they're updated for a few months. Yeah, that's gone now. The Mac Pro. What they did was, it's still the same hardware for the most part, same video cards, which is hilarious because they're now those are 2.5 year old GPUs, and overall it's all the same, but now there's a couple of different CPU options, but still from the same family. It's still the Westmere EP family, so it's still like, now you have a slightly different set of 2010 CPUs to choose from. So it's nice. And in fact, the 6-core 3.3 gigahertz one got a $700 price drop. So now you can get the 6-core 3.3 for $3,000, which is a lot of money to pay for a 2010 CPU. However, that is still, by most benchmarks, that is still the fastest Mac for anything single-threaded or close to single-threaded, which ends up being a lot of stuff. And even for multi-threaded workflows, the only ones faster than that are the other Mac Pros with the 12 cores. So I still think that, you know, the fastest Mac you can buy today is still, for most people, is still that 3.3 six-core Mac Pro. But the difference is shrinking. That, you know, that six-core is still a good buy, but it's, you know, it's like spending $3,000 for a, you know, a two-year-old computer. So it's kind of weird to convince yourself to do that. And I'm not sure what I'm going to do. So,
because before this, you were saying if there was an update on our last episode, you were saying if there is an update to the Mac Pro that you're in, you're ready for this thing. And then the update that came out was not the update we were looking for.
Right. I mean, it's
not even close.
A price drop. That's it is effectively only a price drop.
Yeah.
And not even for all the CPUs. The 12 core models, I believe, are all the same price. The entry price for the 12 core 2.6 is still exactly the same. It's $5,000, I'm pretty sure. So if I wanted to buy a Mac Pro today, I would, no question, I would get the 6 core 3.3 for the new price of $3,000. Which is actually less than I spent on my / your now Mac Pro.
Right.
That was like $3,400 new. So I don't know what I'm going to do about that. By the way, in a hilarious twist, there is construction going on at my hotel.
Of course. You can't escape it.
So I've heard like a couple of like drilling noises here and there. I'm hoping you can hear a few of them eventually.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. So anyway. So I don't, you know, it still has all the benefits of the Mac Pro. It has all the expansion in the drive bays, big RAM ceiling, everything else. You know, it is very graceful when you put it under load. You can't even really tell it's under load. And except the room gets a little bit warmer after a while. and that's about it. So it's still a great computer, but it's an old computer. So it's weird to buy one now. Now, we've heard the comments from Pogue and the rumor email that guy from Mac Rumors got from supposedly from Tim Cook. It sounds, and I've talked to some people who would know, and I've gotten the strong implication from many people, actually. So, you know, it isn't just like one person saying, I think they're making new ones. I've actually gotten an implication from many people, many of whom are well qualified to know, that this is not the last Mac Pro. That another Mac Pro is coming, but not for a little while. Probably not until next year. And the Tim Cook email supposedly even said late 2013.
Oh, so, it actually said late.
I believe it said late 2013. Mm. Or like one of the tips said, you know, late. So what I think is happening here is I think Apple really wants to hold back the release of the next Mac Pro until it can include a Thunderbolt Retina display. And so, you know, we have to basically wait until it is economical to produce such a thing and that Apple could actually sell it for a price that some people would be willing to pay. And who knows when that's going to be. I think a year, you know, a little bit over a year from now, that sounds kind of plausible. Maybe,
so you mean, wait a minute. So you're saying that we're not going to see a Mac Pro until the displays, essentially the displays, can keep up with what they would want to push through that Mac Pro?
That's my guess. My guess is that we don't see a new Mac Pro until there's a new Retina external monitor from Apple. Whether they call it a Thunderbolt display, whether it even uses Thunderbolt, I don't know. But I think we have to wait until that monitor is available, and then I bet they will release the new Mac Pro that you can buy that monitor with, and then you can have a Retina Mac Pro. That's my guess. And I don't know why they didn't just, you know, release an E5 one now and then release that one in a year and a half. I don't know why.
Do you think that we will get a whole complete new redesigned chassis and everything since we're going to have to wait the extra year?
There's the drill you hear. I don't know. I love that I can't escape construction noise.
We're not hearing it during the day.
It's not at night, and I'm gone all day except for right now. So I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do to it. I mean, I don't really care if they redesign the case. Honestly, I really don't care. It's a big honking beast that I keep under my desk. So it doesn't really matter to me how it looks. I would like a redesigned case. I would like it to be a little bit slimmer if possible, but keeping large fans, it might not be able to be that much slimmer. I would like it to be lighter weight and have handles that didn't cut my fingers off when I tried to lift it. But I don't really care that much. I really, really don't about the case. They could keep the exact same case, even if they don't even want to add 2.5-inch drive bays, which I think it needs. But, and you know, I know you can add those on by third-party stuff, but even if they don't want to put drive bay or 2.5-inch drive bays and, you know, do anything like that, I would still be happy with it. Just give me the exact same case, stick an E5 motherboard and CPU in there, and you know, modernize the ports a little bit. Give me USB 3 and give me Thunderbolt. I would be very happy with that, but that's not what they did. And maybe when the next Mac Pro comes out, if such a thing does indeed exist, maybe when that comes out, it will become more obvious to us why they're doing it this way. I don't know the answer to that. Maybe they, you know, the Mac Pro is usually on a 2-year release cycle, although that's usually because of the lack of Xeons more often than that. Maybe they decided we don't want to release 2 Mac Pros in 2 years, so we'll just wait until the second one that we can do. Maybe there's an issue with the E5s. Maybe they run too hot or something and they're waiting for the next die shrink. We don't really know yet, because I believe there's a new, I haven't looked, I forget what's after the E5 in Intel's roadmap, but I think it's coming out in like 6 months or something. I think it's like a minor revision to a die shrink or something like that. I should look that up. But anyway, that's the Mac Pro. Now, the MacBook Air has got updated too. And I think it's interesting because it's exactly what people wanted in the MacBook Air, except the Retina screen. So it's faster CPUs using Ivy Bridge, more RAM. That's great. Having the 8 gig ceiling is a lot better than 4 gigs for high-end use. And USB 3, that's awesome. What I think is weird about the Air update is that it doesn't have the Retina screens. But it makes sense if you look at the economics of this. And, you know, the MacBook Air has to sell for very cheaply, and they sell a lot of them. So if the Retina screen for the 15-inch, like if that kind of technology is still very new, it's probably very expensive. And they probably can't get very high yields on it yet. So even if they could make one smaller, it probably wouldn't be able to replace the current Air models. So I'm guessing we will see Retina Airs once they can replace them in volume and price. And maybe that's another year away. We don't really know.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about the Retina MacBook Pro. Are you ready for this?
I'm prepared for it. I'm awaiting it.
Are you sitting down?
I am sitting on the ball.
Oh, good. Are you bouncing a little bit with the ball?
I guess you always kind of are bouncing a little bit on the ball.
That's very profound. Okay, so...
there is no ball, Marco.
So I've seen the new MacBook Pro.
You have seen it. You have held it.
I have seen it. I actually did hold it very briefly. And...
were you given a demo unit to keep with you by chance?
No, I don't have one. I was able to borrow somebody else's for 30 seconds to pick it up and feel how heavy it was. And it feels very light. It's 4.5 pounds. You know, and people who are accustomed to a MacBook Air of either size will think it's big and heavy. You know, to them, it'll feel like the now defunct 17-inch, like this giant aircraft carrier thing. To me, being accustomed to a 15-inch MacBook Pro, the new Retina one feels very light and very thin, but it feels lighter than it feels thinner, if that makes sense. Like that's the bigger difference.
Right.
So I was very happy with that. The screen is very nice, although in my very, very quick use, or my very quick looking at this thing, I gotta say I didn't really notice the retina-ness of it. Like I, you know, if I looked very closely, I could say, oh yeah, look, everything looks sharper. But it didn't like blow me away the way the Retina iOS devices have. And maybe that's only because now I'm so accustomed to the Retina iOS devices that it just looks normal to me now.
Mm.
But, you know, I don't know whether that's the case, but it looks really nice. But if I didn't have it, I don't necessarily know that I would care that much for now. And maybe that'll change in the future. But for now, like, I think there's a lot of reasons to buy it, and the screen might not be the biggest reason for some people. But it does certainly look very, very nice. And one thing I like about the screen is that they removed that stupid extra layer of glass. And, you know, they talked about that in the keynote. It's really very nice that they... It used to have the you know, like the pixel layer, and then like the finish on the LCD panel was glass, because I think they all are. I think that has to be the case. And then on top of that glass finish, you had either the matte layer or you had the gap and the cover glass. And there's no matte option. But now it looks more like a MacBook Air screen. Like the old plastic glossy style.
Yeah, they said, didn't they say that they reduced the glare by 40%? Am I remembering?
They said
that
75%.
Right? 75, wow. Do you notice that in practice?
Yes. It actually, when I was looking at this thing, I didn't get the impression that it looked like a mirror the way the other ones do. Like it, and you know, I think we should wait for people who are actually using it to use it like in sunlight or, you know, in a brightly lit room and see what they think in use. But my initial impression is very promising. I really, really didn't mind the glass, what is now the new glass coating at all. You know, it was very similar to the MacBook Air. And I've never had a problem with the MacBook Air or the plastic MacBook with that kind of glossy screen. I've never had a problem with that. I just had a problem with the extra layer of glass that's on all the old computers now. And so that gives me hope that maybe the glass era is ending, that maybe the next IMAX and the next cinema display won't have that extra layer of cover glass, that they'll do the same kind of manufacturing process as they did with this new laptop, where the monitor is, it just has the LCD coating glass on it and no additional layer. If they do that, then maybe I can get an IMAX someday, or maybe I can get a cinema display someday. That would be a very big difference. So I'm hoping that spreads across the line, but we'll have to wait. You know, that might take another year or two. All right, let's see what else. I took a whole bunch of notes here.
Well, let's do a quick sponsor.
Sure.
The idea is you get people on the edge of their seat waiting for the next thing, and then they don't know when it's going to start. But this is actually a cool sponsor. You're into the weather apps, right?
Yeah. Which one is it? I'm curious.
This one is Dark Sky. Have you tried this?
I love that one.
Okay. I was going to give you, I said, listen, I'm going to surprise Marco because he loves these weather apps. Let's give him a promo code on the air and he'll be beholden. He'll love it. But you're saying you already have the app.
I own Dark Sky. It is awesome. It is the perfect dog walking weather checking app.
What's very cool, that's a very good way to say it. It's a new kind of weather app, right? It's not your traditional weather app. They use state-of-the-art weather forecasting to predict basically when it's going to rain or snow down to the minute at your exact location. And it shows you these really beautiful radar visualizations. But here's the thing, is that this is your weather. This is not the weather. This is your weather where you're standing down to the minute. And it's very, very cool. And I've found it to be very, very accurate. But it doesn't look like the kind of weather apps that you're used to looking. Even the way that they show the radar is different. Instead of showing that sort of, and I'm like a super weather geek, so I have pretty much every weather app that's ever been made. Normally with radar, you see this sort of chunky, pixelated, you know, yellow, red, and green blob sort of shifting across. What they do is they show this beautifully animated, very attractive, slow. Well, I guess slow, it's the weather slow, but the cloud mass that you see, and it looks really cool. It makes you think you're like in the future or something, but they don't give you a forecast like for your city. It's for your exact location. So they give you minute by minute forecasts for the next hour. And this is what they say. I think they're probably right. It's the only smooth radar visualizations in the world.
And their animation, their frame rates are really high on all their animations. I'm very impressed.
And, it gets all its forecasting data from an API that you can try. I mean, it's very cool. But here's the thing. They're not trying to make a general purpose weather app as much as they're trying to solve the rain problem, as they say. And that's really what you want to know. Is it going to rain? When is it going to rain? Right here. They're not meteorologists at all. They are. One of them was a physics major. And they approach. So because of that, they had a completely different approach to the way that they created this. And it's a very, very cool app. So there's some different ways that you can do this. I'll put the link in the show notes. Of course, it'll be under the sponsored links on the page. But you can go to just darksskyapp.com. You can search for Dark Sky in the iTunes store, or you can use our link, which has a little referral app, which says that you listened to the show and you supported the show. So that'll be darkskyapp.com?REF=5x5. But you can just use a link. But anyway, these guys are great. Marco, I will give your promo code away to someone else.
Cool.
Are you sure you don't want it?
I can't use it. I only have one Apple ID.
All right. Make a new one. Just saying.
Just right. So I can redeem their promo code.
That's all right. So thanks very much. DarkSkyApp.com. Check this out. I love this app.
Yeah, it's great.
Ben, I've been using it for a long time. And then they can't. Hey, we want to sponsor the show. So done. All right. Now back to the details.
All right. So there's one more very good thing about the new Retina MacBook Pro that I know so far. And that is that if you configure SSDs in the old MacBook Pro, now the old MacBook Pro has a new update. So now we have the new MacBook Pro and the new old MacBook Pro, which at least that's my stupid name for them.
What's your thinking on why they even released, why not get rid of the old ones entirely and just have this new one?
Well, why keep the 13-inch MacBook Pro still?
No, I agree. Why? Oh, well.
A few people told me that might be their most selling single model, the 13-inch
over Pro, the 13-inch Air.
A few people said that, and the 13-inch Pro also got updated, which comically still has that crappy screen.
you hate that screen.
Why is it a lower resolution than the MacBook Air screen? I don't understand it. It's probably because it's cheaper. That is probably a very cheap computer to produce, and that's important for like low end buyers, education buyers, anybody who's buying them in bulk and is on a budget. Offices, education, even, students who are going to college and need like a general purpose thing, they still want an optical drive or something. Like, I can see why that exists. I wish it didn't, but I can see why it's for sale. And I just think it's hilarious that they keep selling it. But anyway, that's boring. If you configure the new old style MacBook Pro and the new Retina MacBook Pro to have the same hardware, including the SSD, the new one is actually $300 cheaper. The Retina one. The Retina one is $300 cheaper. And mostly that's because Apple charges $900 for that 512 gig SSD upgrade on the old MacBook Pro. But still, even if you're going to put your own SSD in, your own 480 to 512 gig SSD, you're not going to get it for much less than $700. So, or $600. So actually, if you want a giant SSD and that level of hardware, the Retina MacBook Pro is actually cheaper than the old style one. However, that's still not cheap. It's the configuration I want is like $3,200 if I were to get one. And that's with the 512 gig SSD. If you want the 768 gig SSD, that's an extra $500 for that extra 256 gigs.
So are you planning on getting one of these things?
I don't know yet. So here's why. All right. So that's all the good stuff. Here's the bad stuff that I think so far. First of all of the new MacBook Pros, including the Retina one, still have discrete GPUs. And they're still using 45-watt TDP Ivy Bridge chips now. So they're using very big, cutting edge and therefore probably fairly hot running GPUs. They're running big, hot, quad-core CPUs. And so I think the issues I have with my current one of it running a bit hot and needing to turn the fans on fairly frequently if I'm taxing the CPU at all, or needing to bring the fans to an audible level fairly mm-hmm. frequently.
Yeah.
I think the new ones will all still have that problem. And so I'm very curious to see on the new Retina one how hot it runs and how loud it is. And if you put it under a bit of CPU stress, how much do the fans spin up? How much do you hear them? Now, they did that weird thing with the fan blades, the asymmetrical fan blade they talked about in the keynote. I haven't yet seen anybody who has one of these review units and who has commented on the noise or been able to really judge it. I think it's a bizarre solution. The problem that they were facing, I imagine, is, hey, we have these hot CPUs and this market demands external GPUs still. How do we make a laptop that runs cool enough and with these hot components? Now, my solution would have been drop the GPU. Just use the integrated GPU. It's good enough. I think, but I don't know with this high resolution. They might not have been, but I think it would be good enough. And just drop the GPUs and save a whole bunch of heat there, and then maybe have nice low wattage CPU options, so that maybe you have the 45 watt one on the high end, but maybe like there's a low end option that's like a 35 or 25 watt part.
May I read something to you from from Jim Dalrymple, our friend Jim, who hosts Amplified right here on 5x5. He writes,
that beard is amazing.
It's not a doubt. First look Retina display MacBook Pro, he writes. And he says he met with Apple. They handed him one of these things, and he walked out with it. And here's what he says about heat. And I bookmarked this.
You just stole it?
Well, a guy like that, you don't really try to stop him.
He just walked out with it.
Yeah,
no one wanted to approach him.
It's like, hey, Jim, would you like to see this? Yes, I would. And he puts it under his arm, walks out.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, a guy like that, you let him go. Here's what he says. I tried to get the MacBook Pro hot enough to turn the fans on, but after a few hours of using it, the fans have still not turned on, or if they have, I haven't been able to hear them. I've been doing regular work on the Retina MacBook so far, like image editing, writing, email, and browsing the web. I used it on the desk in my lab, and there is no heat coming from the notebook at all. It seems to be a lot like the MacBook Air in that respect. Now, what he didn't do, obviously, and what you would have liked him to do, or
I run Handbrake.
Yeah, is to run Handbrake and do some video encoding, because that really is a great test of whether a machine gets hot.
Yeah.
But
I mean, there's also, you can get like Prime 95 and like things like that that'll just like run big math algorithms on all the cores. And
doesn't this somewhat anecdotal point of reference still indicate, though, that maybe they've got it licked, that maybe there's hope that it's not going to get like crazy
hot? Possible. I mean, that would be a very good sign if indeed this thing does not spin its fans up audibly very often. That would be great. I would love for that to be the case. I am skeptical, honestly. I'm very skeptical, but I would love to be proven wrong on that. And I think there's my solution to solve this problem would have been to use lower power components. Apple's solution to this problem was let's just spin the fan faster, it seems. and do these blades so that rather than having like one droning note, it's a chord of fan noise. It's a funny solution. It's a weird solution. It might be a great solution. It also might not matter. So again, I'm very curious to hear from people who get these things, whether it's really an issue or not. And what's interesting, the CPUs in them are very, very fast. I think based on Ivy Bridge performance and based on Geekbench scores I've seen on other Ivy Bridge CPUs, it would not surprise me to see this bench pretty close to the iMacs. So not quite into Mac Pro territory yet, but I bet it's going to get into the iMac territory. And that's interesting, especially given that right now it looks like we're not going to see a new Mac Pro for maybe another year and a half or 2 years. So what's especially interesting about that is that it's very possible that with the next update to this platform, the MacBook Pro will probably be faster than the Mac Pro. At least like the 6-core models of the Mac Pro. So it's very possible that Apple's really just kind of waiting this out and saying, you know what, how much do you really need the Mac Pro? And CPU performance is not the only reason to buy one, but it's a big reason. And
what about all your arguments and John Syracuse's arguments for the amount of storage and for all of
right.
these?
Drive bays, expansion. Yeah. If a lot of pro markets still need
graphics PCI Express cards,
lots of monitors, things like that. There's still all those reasons, certainly, but Apple's chipping away at them, and every year, some of those reasons become a little bit less important because the notebooks and the iMacs get a little bit better.
You know, we don't do that much video streaming at all anymore, but for a while, for the first year, we did a lot more of it, and we may come back to it at some point, but I had a Mac Pro just fully decked out with HDMI capture cards for cameras and for other screens and things like that. And you can't put three or four of these cards in anything except a Mac Pro. Well, Thunderbolt, USB 3, these allow you to have those devices external. And the Blackmagic company, the same guys that made the cards that we use, they now have external versions USB 3 right now, but who knows if they'll make them Thunderbolt. But it's the whole, you know, just to kind of further your point, even in what I guess might be considered high-end video capture, that industry, they're even kind of following that lead and saying, well, yeah, these originally, I think they're pitching them as this would work great on your laptop, your mobile video, but maybe it's not just for laptops. Maybe it's the desktop solution at some point too, especially if they were to come out with a Thunderbolt version of it.
Right. I definitely think that is the future. I'm not sure whether that's the present yet. So, you know, it's very possible that Apple was like, maybe the reason they didn't give a crap about making a Xeon E5 Mac Pro, apparently, maybe the reason is that they thought Thunderbolt would take off faster and they thought they wouldn't need to make another Mac Pro. And that really hasn't panned out.
Yeah.
And, you know, Thunderbolt is catching on, but it's really slowly catching on. You know, it actually is a fast protocol. And now we now have Thunderbolt Gigabit and Thunderbolt FireWire 800 adapters, which is very nice. $30 each from Apple, which is very cheap. I figured they'd be $100. So that's pretty good news. But, you know, I do think, again, like I think the need for the Mac Pro is diminishing over time, but I think that's happening more slowly than Apple would have liked, and possibly more slowly than they were expecting. So anyway, other downsides of the new 15-inch Retina MacBook Pro. There's no more upgradable RAM. It's very similar to the Airs. The RAM is permanently mounted on the board. It is not even in any kind of slot or socket. It is like soldered on there. It's permanent. You can go up to 16 gigs for $200 extra, which is nice. I think if I were getting that computer and intended to use it for a long time, I would definitely get the 16 gig upgrade because it's only $200. That's a lot of RAM and you can never change it yourself. The SSD upgrade ability is a question right now. The new MacBook Airs still use a slot stick kind of SSD that's mountable internally. The old ones had I believe it was an M serial ATA, micro serial ATA connector, something like that. The new ones have a different connector. No one's quite figured out what it is yet, but you might be able to upgrade the new Airs SSDs. The new Retina MacBook Pro, I think we are still waiting on a teardown. I don't think we actually know whether that one is like in a slot and can be removed and upgraded, or whether it is mounted permanently, or if it is a slot, whether it's some kind of really proprietary thing that nobody else can figure out how to interface with. So for the time being, we don't know whether the SSD will be upgradable in the new Retina MacBook Pro. My guess would be if you're going to buy it, expect that it's not upgradable. You know, maybe you'll be pleasantly surprised down the road, but expect for now that it's not upgradable. And so then you have to make that decision, 512 or 768. And the 768 is $500 more. Mm. That's a bit of a rough decision. In my laptop with my two bays, like the one in the OptiBay thing and the one in the regular bay, I have a total of about 700 gigs of storage. And it's enough, but barely. Like, I really have to juggle things around sometimes and put things onto my home server to fit comfortably into 768 gigs and still have any room to spare. So if I got one, I think I'd have to probably get that high-end one for the extra $500, which sucks. But that would be, you know, again, you can probably never upgrade it. There's no dual drive capability in there. There's no room for it. There's no standard bays. There's no CD-ROM bay to replace with a bracket or anything. It's just one SSD, that's it. You're stuck with whatever you get, probably. You might be able to upgrade it, but we don't know that for sure. It might not happen. So that's a tough choice. And if you do want that, the price goes up to almost $4,000. Or at least like $3,500. There you go. There's a big construction noise.
No, we're not hearing it, man. It's all gated out.
Oh, good. All right. So now the big question, I think, for this Retina MacBook Pro for a lot of people, this is going to appeal to people who love cutting-edge Macs. However, many people who love cutting-edge Macs have converted to the MacBook Air in recent years. And so to a lot of those people, if you're using an 11 or a 13-inch Air, this thing's going to feel like an aircraft carrier, like I said earlier. It's this bigger, heavier thing. And even though it's very thin and light compared to a 15-inch previous laptop, compared to the Airs, it is still very big.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's going to happen if you, you know, it's, if you spend like $3,500 buying one of these things, and then what are you going to think in 8 months or 6 months or a year when there's a Retina MacBook Air? Like, are you going to really regret having purchased this thing?
Yeah.
Because, like, are you going to want to go back to the Air-sized laptop? So that's going to be a difficult thing for a lot of people who are jumping on this. Like, you know, are you going to still want that a year from now, basically? Like, are you still going to, or are you going to regret not waiting for the Retina Air?
Yeah, if you think about it, right now, it's a really tough decision what MacBook to get, whether to get one, whether to wait. There are compelling reasons for the first time for me in a long time, although I'm not in the market to get a new one because I have an 11-inch Air that I got not too long ago. You probably remember that. But it is a tough time. You've got to decide not just between an Air and a MacBook, but a MacBook Pro rather, but there's so many different MacBook Pros. There's different Airs. I wouldn't go so far as to say that it's confusing, but we're geeks. Would this be confusing, do you think, to the regular people who just want to go in and get a laptop and they see, well, why are there two different 13-inch ones? Oh, this one's an Air. Well, what's the difference between an Air and a Pro? Do I need a Pro? And wait a minute, there's two 15 Pros. Oh, that one has the Retina display. Wow, I want that. Oh, wait, how much is it? It seems a little bit more confusing. You know what I'm saying? It's not as simple as it used to be. And I often wonder, I mean, Apple has done so much successfully to simplify their lines, their product lines over the years. I'm not talking about little customization options, but the idea that, like, in my mind, I'm sure that they've got good reasons not to do this and that they know a few things more than I do about supply chain and things like that. But you would think that they should have maybe three computers, like laptops. They should have the 11, they should have the 13, both of them Airs, and then they should have this brand new 15-inch MacBook Pro. And that's it. Like, I'm not saying that would be good for their business, but it sure would be simple for the consumer to go in and say, what do you want? You want the really tiny one? You want the like medium-sized one, or do you want the big one? And they all have a Retina display as soon as they can do it, and that's it. You know, right. I feel like it's not, again, it's not confusing probably for us and for anyone who's listening to the show, but for regular people, it might be. Well, you know, it sure would be a tough decision.
Right. Like, you know, we're in the middle of two major transitions that do weird things to the economics, basically. We're transitioning to SSDs and we're transitioning to Retina screens. And because of both of those things, and we're transitioning away from optical drives and a few legacy ports. Because we're in the middle of such major transitions that have significant drawbacks and impact on the cost.
Yeah.
Like they can't make one model of anything that's going to satisfy everybody and be affordable to everybody and not have any drawbacks or be able to address every market. Like because we're in the middle of these transitions, they need to kind of straddle the line a bit and still produce the old ones because the new ones can't totally replace them yet.
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah, it's just weird how many different versions of MacBooks exist right now. And I think we are seeing what you're essentially describing is this is temporary. This is a transitional point.
Definitely. I mean, I definitely think that probably within 2 years, I would say all of the old style unibody MacBook Pros are gone. But it might take 2 years to get to that point where it's economical enough to do that. And, you know, where they to get to the point where the Retina and SSD equipped laptops have enough storage and are cheap enough and, you know, good enough battery life and everything else to satisfy all the buyers. One other thing also, they didn't put LTE in the new laptops. Like there's no cellular modem options still. And, you know, Apple has never offered that, but, I really wish they would, but I understand why they don't. You know, if you think about it, I don't think they would build in a cell modem without also having the deals with the carriers to have the data plan, just like the iPad. And I don't think, and you know, it's different now with data caps on all the cellular plans, but I don't think it would be very practical to have a lot of people using cell data on laptops, because the laptop or like the computer environment is generally not written to conserve bandwidth. Desktop software in general usually assumes that you're going to be connected to a Wi-Fi network that is not bandwidth metered, or that is bandwidth metered to such a high level that it's you're not really going to hit the limits.
Right, except Skype, but yes.
Except Skype. So, you know, and if you have it, think about it, like if you have a laptop tethered to an iPad now, there are pretty easy ways to accidentally burn through a large chunk of your data allowance on that data plan.
Right.
And I know this because I did it last night.
Oh.
Because the hotel Wi-Fi here, as we discovered a few minutes ago, is so terrible that I've been using tethering. And I left the tethering on all night, and I left my laptop awake all night. And overnight, iTunes decided, let's download the new episode of Mad Men
for
my season pass.
Oh, man.
So I wake up to a whole bunch of iTunes errors because the download didn't finish, and my iPad saying, you have no more data. That's it. Done. So I had to buy I had to buy more data, which and the, you know, the process of doing that, okay, I pay another $30 and you know, given that's the first time I've ever hit a data overage, I don't feel too ripped off by it. And it was a stupid thing I did. I left it running overnight and I didn't realize like I have things that will run overnight. You know, like what if you have like does system preference or does a software update automatically download the updates before asking you to install them?
You know, I think it does. I think that can be.
Or maybe that's the default, at least.
Yeah.
So I think mine does that too. So, like, what if there's like, you know, an OS X update that's 400 megs and it downloads that overnight for you?
All right. So here's what it has. The default, I believe, under scheduled check is check for weekday, if check for updates, and you can have weekly or daily. I think weekly is the default. And then underneath that, download updates automatically. So if you have that checked, which you probably do, oops.
Right. Exactly. So, like, you know, in general, in the desktop environment, there's a lot of things that can burn a lot of data, especially things that are running in the background that either are hidden or that are system processes like that, things that you don't really think about. So if you're in an environment like a cellular radio where you have to conserve data, or where you should at least conserve data, a regular like PC or Mac laptop is not really a good environment for that. And so maybe that's a direction Apple can take future OS releases, but that's a tough problem. It's, you know, it's like sandboxing. It's like trying to impose controls and limits on an already established ecosystem of software is not easy. And so, you know, I wonder about that, and I wonder if that is the reason why we don't have built-in cellular modems on the Mac laptops. Maybe because Apple recognizes that problem and they realize like, it's kind of a crappy experience if people who don't really know what they're doing that much, they just think, oh, iTunes is downloading a movie that I told it to download. That's great. And then they realize it costs them $30 in data. Like, that's a crappy experience and would cause a lot of problems. So I'm guessing that's why we don't have LTE modems in the laptops. So it sucks, but we, you know, the geeks can tether, and, you know, you're kind of like in the Wild West, you're kind of on your own if you're tethering. It's like, you know, you can do it. But if you screw up, it's your fault, and you're a nerd, so you should know what you're doing. And yes, I know non-nerds tether occasionally, but nerds certainly do it a lot.
Our second sponsor for this special show is FreshBooks.com. These guys provide painless billing. This is who I use. This is the only company that I use to invoice all of our sponsors and everything else that we do when it comes to invoicing. I use FreshBooks for everything, and I have long before they were a sponsor. What they let you do, they let you focus on your work, not your paperwork. They're the fastest way to track time, organize expenses, and invoice your clients. Because to be honest, I don't use the word hate very often, but it gets very close to me wanting to use that word when I think about invoicing and organizing expenses. None of that stuff is fun. I don't want to do that. So these guys make it painless. They let you save a lot of time. Instead of going and creating a Word template and manually calculating invoice totals in Excel and chasing your clients around to get them to pay you, well, it's time to evolve. You just create a professional invoice once using their system, and they handle everything else. They send these invoices out for you. You can send PDF versions. You can even have them print out and mail an invoice for you with real paper with a stamp and everything, envelope and everything. Or you can do it all electronically where your client customer gets a link and they click it. And of course, these guys integrate with all of your favorite gateways, PayPal, which is the easy one to use, authorize.net. All of the ones that you like, they integrate. So if you want to take your payments electronically, you can. Right there, your customer gets the invoice. And here's the cool thing. When you send your customer the invoice, you can see that they've reviewed. You can see they received it. You can see when they viewed it. You can see when they checked in on it. All right there within the FreshBooks.com system. And if the person that you're invoicing or being invoiced by uses FreshBooks, boom, it'll show up right in your own account. I love these guys. You can try it free for 30 days. Okay, so you go to FreshBooks.com, you sign up, and free for 30 days. There's no obligation. You don't have to like give them a credit card. It's just straightforward. It's simple. And you have unlimited access to the site. It's not like a free trial account. You get the full account. You get to use whatever you think you want. You get the security and everything else. Go check it out. I love these guys, and I think you will too. FreshBooks.com.
All right, now let me get to iOS before we run out of time here. With Mountain Lion, I don't have that much to say. I don't really care because I'm not a Mac developer at the moment. We didn't really learn anything new about Mountain Lion that I thought was like massively significant. It looks nice. I hope John Siracusa gets his review done in time.
Yeah. When is it coming out?
They said July.
Oh man. He's
so
shut down.
Of course, he's rushing to get it done July 1st, even though, I mean, they're not going to release an OS during the July 4th week.
No, they'll release it the very, very last day of July. It'll be available, for download.
Like the last Thursday of July, that's when they'll release it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess that's the 26th, looks
like. Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would guess something like that, not July 1st. But he doesn't know, and you got to be ready for that. So anyway, iOS 6. There's a lot of stuff here for users. There's significant improvements and new things in maps, turn-by-turn directions. I think even like the phone app improvements are awesome. That whole like remind me later thing. Did they show that during the keynote? Yeah. I gotta keep straight what's NDA'd and what's not.
Yeah, because the keynote has been publicly released, or is it just released for developers?
The keynote is public. Everything that's not in the keynote is under NDA. Anyway, doesn't matter. So big improvements for users in iOS 6. But for developers, it's more of an evolutionary update, not a revolutionary update. It's for developers, it's almost like a 0.5 release. We didn't get any of the big rumored things that we were all hoping for. There's no Siri API. There's nothing like Android's sharing intents or Windows 8's contracts. Nothing even close to that. There's no extensible inter-app communication, anything. Apps still have no better or different ways to communicate with each other or share data. Everything is still just a siloed and locked down as before. There is a new system sharing menu, but it's like all predefined services. It's like the Facebook, Twitter, Safari, email, and copy. Like, that's it. You can't add your app to that window, to that menu. And I've already gotten people on Twitter asking me if I can, and assuming I could. Trust me, I can't. And it sucks. I still have to use bookmarklets as far as I know in Safari. Although I haven't installed the beta yet, so I'm not 100% confirmed on that, but I'm pretty sure, the bookmarklet thing is still the same. It probably isn't any better to install them. And I still need them because there's no way not to need them. I still need to use core location to wake myself up in the background because there's still no background API that non-newsstand apps can use. And I still can't be a newsstand app. There's no changes to multitasking, no changes to that tray design to make it easier for people to realize they don't need to kill all their apps. There's no widgets. There's no changes at all to large chunks of the interface. There's no new theme, and there's no paid upgrades and no trials. So there's a whole lot of stuff that we all kind of thought we might be getting or hoped to get that we didn't get at all. So we got almost none of it. There are a lot of nice little things that are different, and there's a few nice big things in the APIs. And I think it's safe for me to say, because it was on one of the slides, one of them is rich text support. And that is huge. To have rich, it's basically, you know, it's what we've been asking for since version 2. To have, to be able to draw attributed strings with rich formatting. It's not arbitrary HTML that's the input, although people will write their own things that will convert it badly. But it's just like attributed strings on the desktop. You can now render rich text with all the UIKit components. You don't have to like use a web view or write your own manually with core text. So that's really nice. Also, there is now auto layout, which is what was introduced in, I think, in Lion for Mac apps. Now that's on iOS, so that's really cool. So it's like a, it's an alternative and a much more sophisticated system to replace auto resizing masks. And now we have this cool thing called Collection View, which people on which Mac programmers will know. The iOS one, I don't know that much about it yet. I'm going to learn about that in 20 minutes, but I can't tell you anyway.
Hmm.
But it looks pretty cool. That could replace my grid view in my iPad interface, which was a big pain in the butt to program and took me forever. And Apple just made it very, very easy for anyone else to create something exactly like it and better. So there are new things in iOS 6 that I am going to like and that I am going to want to use. The big question is, you know, just like last year with iOS 5, I can't really use a lot of this stuff until I can require iOS 6 for my app. So the question is, when does that happen? So one thing that's annoying about this release is that it drops support for the iPod Touch 3G, the third generation iPod Touch. Even though it has the same hardware, roughly, as the 3GS, the iPhone 3GS, which is still for sale, the 3GS gets iOS 6, and the iPod Touch third generation does not. And I have to imagine that the reason why is the kind of cynical reason of, well, they're still selling the 3GS, so they have to support it, kind of. But they're not still selling the iPod Touch third gen, so let's cut it out. And that's kind of a crappy reason, if that is the reason. It might not be. There might be other hardware differences that I'm not aware of, but that would be a pretty crappy reason if so. The bigger problem is that iOS 6 drops support for the first generation iPad. Now, for a lot of apps, that doesn't really matter. If your app is iPhone only, obviously it doesn't matter. If your app is not very popular on the iPad, that might not matter. For me, that matters because Instapaper is very popular on iPads. So to cut out the iPad 1 is a pretty big deal. And I don't know when I'll be able to do that. So, you know, I was thinking like maybe by the springtime, you know, this past spring I required iOS 5 and that worked just fine. Maybe by the spring this coming year, when the iPad 4 or whatever they call it, the new iPad, when the iPad 4 is released, then maybe I can require iOS 6. Then they figure like, you know, I'm three generations ahead on iPads. I can drop the first gen iPad.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know yet. Even, you know, iOS 5 doesn't really run very well on the iPad 1. A lot of people have problems with
that. Oh, it is horrible, horrible, horrible. I am running it here on a first gen and it is, I wish I could go back. Some of the, you know, again, this is what my son runs, what I'm running on his. And I thought, oh, you know, I'll get this because there was some game and there's something that he needed. I forget what it was. But man, it's the worst. It's slow. And try doing things with iTunes and like going to the app store and buying stuff. It's painful. And what's weird, Marco, is that it doesn't even always register taps. Like I've never seen that with an iOS device before, but like you'll tap to install something and it just like, it doesn't register it. And I'll do the exact same thing on the iPad too. It works fine.
You know, the original iPad had very little RAM. It only has 256. And when it came out, even when it was brand new, people were complaining about that, saying that's really not enough. And even when it was brand new, it had problems like you'd be viewing pages in Safari and it would be so aggressive,
the checkerboard,
with kicking them out of memory,
yeah,
because it didn't have enough, that you, like, you, if you had like two Safari windows open, you like alternate between them, and every time I'd have to reload the page because like even with that few, because it's a bigger screen than the 3GS, so it needs a lot more memory for various on-screen textures and buffers and layers and everything. It was released with too little RAM even when it was brand new. So it is not that big of a surprise that they're cutting support for it now. It almost looks like iOS 5 shouldn't have been released for it, you know? So I'm guessing that dropping support for it in apps is going to happen. iOS 6 will be out in the fall, supposedly. It wouldn't surprise me to see a lot of apps start dropping support for iOS 5 by the spring, and therefore for the iPad 1. And we'll see what happens. All right, finally.
You want to do our last sponsor before that?
Yes, sponsor and then last topic.
Last sponsor, hover.com. You remember these guys from last week. Yeah. Simplified domain management. So you wake up one morning, you say, I got the perfect.com or .net or whatever. And you say, I'm going to go register this. So you go, where do you go? You go to Hover. And I'll tell you why. They have a little search box. You type in the domain name that you're thinking of in the search box. And without all kinds of crap, without trying to make you sign up for a ton of different things, just simple, elegant, straightforward interface that will tell you, yes, this domain that you thought of is available. No, it's not. But here's some really good, relevant suggestions, not just 100 random adjectives shoved in front of the domain you actually wanted. You can type in keywords. Type in 2-3 keywords and it'll find domain names that match those. But it does this really intelligently. I've joked in the past that it's a robot that's doing this. I doubt it's an actual physical robot, but that is how I like to imagine it because the names that it comes up with are actually really good. You click the little plus box and that's it. You sign up, you pay, and you're done. They don't email you. They don't spam you. They don't add a ton of other services onto what you do. There's a really cool feature. Once you have more than one domain, I've got a handful there. They have bulk domain management. You can manage multiple domains at the same time without any hassle. It's as easy to edit 50 of them as it is to edit 2 of them. This is a great kind of thing. Let's say you move or you've got a new postal address. You want to change it, done. All of them. One step. They make transfers super easy. Renewals, that's the only time you're going to hear from them. Your domain comes up for renewal. You get an email. Oh, it's up for renewal. That's it. They have built in a couple more things they do. Unlimited domain forwarding. No charge for Whois privacy. I told you about the advanced DNS management, but it's real easy to add DNS records. They give you a nice little default sample of them. And when you want to change one, you just mouse over it, click the link, change the IP address. It's simple. The whole thing is about elegance, simplicity, and I have a coupon for you. 10% off anything you do there, registrations, transfers, you name it. They even do email hosting. Use the code Dan sent me, one word, Dan sent me, and you'll get 10% off anything you do there, everything you do there. Use a coupon code every day. Get a new domain every morning, 10% off. So check these guys out, hover.com, or you can just go right to hover.com/Dan sent me, and that will immediately apply the coupon code. So go check them out.
Nice. Oh, and while we've been recording, Mac Rumors has published benchmarks from the new MacBook Pros, the Retina ones, and the non-Retina ones for that matter.
Oh, I'll put this right into the show notes.
It looks like they're benching in the 12,000 range on Geekbench, which is pretty good. That's I believe, slightly faster than the 3.4 gigahertz iMac, which I think is in the 11 somewhere, but I'll have to look it up.
So on this one, the higher the number is better.
Yes. Okay. And you know, I have to, and Geekbench, you know, it's a synthetic benchmark. It is very parallelized. So, you know, if you're looking for speed at single threaded things, which is still very important because still a lot of apps are not very well threaded, Geekbench is not the only thing you should look at because, you know, you should look at how quickly it runs one thread or two threads, especially things like Photoshop that are still very poorly parallelized. For that, I believe the 3.33 Mac Pro is probably still going to be the fastest Mac. But this is pretty close. The 3.3 Mac Pro is like 15,000. This is like 12,000 on this benchmark. That's pretty close. And it's in a laptop. So, if this thing runs cool enough, if the fan really doesn't spin up audibly very often, then maybe I'd get one of these to hold me over till the next Mac Pro. I don't know. Or maybe I should just get one of those $3,000 6-core Mac Pros and sell it to you in a year and get the new one then.
Well, I want the new one, though.
Well, you didn't last time.
Yeah, that's true. I'll probably buy it again. Yeah, I'm telling you, your Mac Pro is here. It's great.
It's great. And I appreciate John Siracusa defending my video card to you last time.
That's right. He did defend that.
You suspected it was a third-party card. No, it's an Apple 8800 GT.
Well, it has such loud fans on it. It's like it's not loud when the machine is just running, but if you wake it up from sleep or boot it.
It's like 3 seconds of like maximum fan speed.
Well, if you put it to sleep, it does that too.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. All right. So last thing, the Facebook integration in the App Store is interesting. And I haven't seen it really yet, except for what's in the keynote, which I guess is good. Now I can talk about it. It looks like they're replacing the system of, you know, X people or X out of Y users found this review helpful. They're replacing that, it looks like, with the Facebook like count, which has an interesting set of side effects. One is that, first of all, like, are they replacing user reviews completely? That would be interesting. I don't think they are, but that would be interesting to have like everyone's real name attached to their user reviews on the App Store. But the current system has the method of negative feedback. You can say this review was not helpful. It doesn't matter that much because they sort by number of helpfuls descending. So, you know, a review that says like 10 out of 70 people found this helpful will rank higher than one that says 9 out of 9 people found this helpful, which is bad, I think, but that's how it works. It looks like now they've totally done away with the negative part of it, which was barely implemented before. So now it really will work even more like a voting system where you upvote people's reviews. And what tends to happen here is feature request 1-star reviews get upvoted. And I know, I mean, this happens to my app, but I'm pretty sure it happens to a lot of people's apps. I don't think this is just like a me-specific problem. And that's going to kind of suck. But what could also happen is if this Facebook integration runs kind of deeply in the App Store app, this could really help discovery of lesser-known apps through friend networks. So that this actually might be a really good thing for the App Store. It might take away somewhat the rich get richer phenomenon where, you know, if you're not in the top list, you're invisible. And if you're in the top list, you tend to stay there for a while just because of the sales that you get from being in the top list. So that could be really interesting. And I want to watch that closely and see how that goes. But otherwise, I think that's it for the day. I'm about to run out of time. I have to go walk back over to Moscone and get into another giant line.
Are there lines for all the sessions?
Yes. Oh, yes. It's crazy.
Don't you just show me like, come on down, Marco, man.
No, not at all.
You could. I mean, you realize you could do that.
But everybody there is somebody. You know.
Well, but that's true anywhere you go.
Oh, everywhere except Pennsylvania. No, just kidding.
So you just show up. Here's what I think you should just try, just for fun. Like, don't actually do this. Walk up. Wait until the last minute when the session's going to go in. Just wait. And walk up to the very front of the line when you sense they're about to open the door. And just look at the guy and say, I'm Marco. I made Instapaper. And walk right in front of him. Just see what happens. I'm just saying. You're going to push the limits.
I probably won't do that.
All right. You get recognized a lot as you're out there on the floor?
Here I do, actually, yeah. I mean, not in real life otherwise, but
right.
at this particular conference, yes, I do. It's pretty nice, actually. I feel like a celebrity for a week.
That's right. That's why you're supposed to bring your wife with you so she can... So you're kind of a big deal, Marco. You're not just the guy that forgets to put his shoes away. You're actually like, you're somebody big. You're like you're a celebrity. I married a celebrity.
Exactly.
Well, I hope you keep having fun, and I don't want to hold you up from your...
I gotta go.
All right.
Yeah, thanks for doing the show with this weird remote setup, and nice seeing all of you listeners or hearing, not hearing you. I don't know. I'm confused.
Get some rest. Stop yelling at people in bars.
Yeah.
Just stay, you know, just try and rest. All right, have a great time out there.
This hotel has a squishy Acura on the desk.
What does that mean?
It's like, you know, like those foam stress balls?
Yeah.
And you can get them like molded to all sorts of custom shapes. There's a squishy Acura MDX on my desk at the hotel that came with the hotel.
Is it complimentary?
It's some kind of ad for an Acura touring service that I guess is in affiliation with the W Hotel.
I mean, can you? Is it yours to keep?
Good question. I don't know. I don't really want it, but
I've
do you
stayed
want
in
a squishy
that
Acura MDX.
Yes.
You know, they ruined the bar. The whole downstairs, they redecorated it. Now it's covered in dots, and they rearranged everything, and it's all like white and black and like techno music playing and weird purple lighting. Something. It's really weird. The old one looked like a place you go to get a really nice old fashioned.
Right.
The new one looks like a place where you go to order like a neon colored vodka drink of some sort.
When was the last time you stayed there?
This is the first year I've stayed here.
Oh.
Because I thought it was going to be like it was last year. And it turns out that they redecorated it in the meantime, and now it sucks.
I haven't been there for a few years, but it's when I was there, it was the way you're describing before. It was like cool.
Yeah, and I don't think I'd stay here again. The rooms are actually nicer at the Intercontinental.
You know what you want to do, though? You want to stay up on the 34th floor of that.
Oh, yeah.
Because they have these two like little suites up there, and they're kind of more kind of tucked away. They're smaller, but they're pretty cool.
Maybe next time.
Yeah, see if we can get him to change your room.
Yeah, I doubt it.
Have a great time, Marco.
Thanks. I'll see you next week.